biking, so that's awesome.
Yeah, it's been pretty great. Well, good. Well, welcome back. Glad you're safe. Congratulations on a good time.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
All right, so I'm not sure who else will be joining us today. Sometimes people come and go or they come late, but let's jump in and just see where you guys want to start. Colin, would you like to go first? It's since your first day. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about, if anything? You can also just be a listening member, and JD and I can jump some stuff if he's got things.
Well, first, I don't know JD. It sounds like he's part of kind of your team and so forth. So,
JD is
or
one of the clients.
oh,
So,
okay, awesome,
yeah.
cool.
So JD is a pharmacy supervisor and manages teams and has been doing that for 15 years or so, I think. Is
Great.
that about right,
Well,
JD? Did I get that right?
awesome.
Yeah,
Nice to
sure.
meet you, JD.
Colin, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit? I mean, more people may come on, but go ahead and
Sure.
with this.
So Chief Operating Officer of a more boutique style insurance brokerage firm out in the Los Angeles area. We specialize in service healthcare institutions, so we work with a lot of health systems, universities, and others that have a medical school or other types of healthcare delivery networks. We primarily focus on the medical malpractice insurance, but we do all commercial lines or all property and casualty insurance lines. As a consultant and do a lot of risk management consulting as well. My role is kind of two-part. I do some servicing on some of the larger institutions and university clients, but also just oversee the operations of our entire organization, including finance, HR, and so on and so forth. We recently were part of a merger with a larger institution by the name of PCF Insurance Services. So a lot of my interest in working with Shane and learning more about leadership is change management. We have a unique culture. We've built that culture over about 25, almost 30 years of existence. I don't want that culture to be impacted negatively or changed post-merger. And so I really want to make sure that I am standing up my leadership and my team in order to further that culture that we've worked tirelessly to build over the years and really have a lot of the things in front of us to make sure that we continue that forward.
Great. So what do you want to dig in on today? You want to start strategizing about that? Where are we with that? I can ask some questions around that if you'd like to start there, or if you have other things, we can talk about other things.
Yeah, I'd love to start there. Most recently, or the most top of mind for me is just transition on from an employee perspective. Now, this has taken place in a lot of different regards with respect to different avenues within the organization. Most recently, it was under the 401k plan. And so we've had some challenges in just navigating and keeping communications consistent. We're dealing with three or four different parties. We have the old plan, we have the new plan, and we have an outside 401k administrator consultant that we work with. And so managing that message and making sure the employees are hearing the real message has been extremely challenging. So we get some information, bits and pieces of information from here, bits and pieces of information from here, and then we go out and distribute that to the employees, and then it turns out, oh, they need this form versus that form, or this form was the incorrect. And so really trying to kind of herd cats has really been a big challenge for us in this transition, and I think it'll be continued challenge as we're continuing to get different messages from different providers or from corporate or so on and so forth. So I guess really just reining in communications from different sources would be something that I'd like to learn more about.
Okay, so let me get some orientation on where you are. How many more, when you do this, this is an acquisition or a merger? What is this?
Acquisition.
You've acquired or you've been acquired?
Been acquired.
Been acquired. How big is the company you were brought into?
200 million top line.
And how many people?
700.
And how many people do you have?
30. And we're
30.
about a 15 million top line.
And what is their messaging to you as it relates to how they plan to interact with you?
Arm's length distance, leave us alone.
That's what they've said.
And for the most part, they've been adherent to that word or to that perspective. We
Okay.
represent a very large, their largest vertical, us and another agency. So the two of us that we've known for many, many years, we represent their largest vertical. So we've been able to say, as they've come in and said, oh, we should change this, or a lot of our agencies are doing this. We say, no, we got it. We do this, and then prove ourselves to them. And they've been very, very amenable and collaborative in that regard.
Okay. And how long has this acquisition been in place?
Started in February of this year. So it's really fresh.
Okay. I remember some of those things. I just needed to jog my memory. Okay. So the primary area of impact is less on culture and more on some of the logistics of reward systems and systems of HR and that kind of stuff. Am I hearing that right?
Currently, yes. I worry that as we distribute information that's not quote unquote 100% accurate, our credibility and my credibility as a leader in the organization and as having a foothold and a control or at least an understanding of everything and how it's going forward is lessening. And I don't want that perspective to then impact our ability to further and drive culture.
That is for sure. Yeah. So why are you getting inaccurate information? What's happening? You don't know that it's inaccurate and then you put it out. And then
different sources. So the larger organization, for better or for worse, we look at it as both ways, is not that well organized, at least to our standards. And we've seen this throughout the transition when we were transitioning HR. I mean, we came up with a lot of different distributions, timelines and things. This is what you should expect. And they didn't have this information or this paperwork available to us. We created it and sent it back to corporate and said, hey, you guys should use something like this because all of our employees are asking these questions. And so we wanted to lay it all out for them. So we've seen that they are really, really focused on growth. And they're going out and just growing as quickly as possible. And their infrastructure is now trying to catch up. And it's not doing very well just because of the amount of growth that they're achieving. So this is inevitably causing some miscommunications where we reach out to the people that we're supposed to reach out to, get information from them, distribute it out to our employees, and then comes back when something gets submitted, they say, oh, no, you should have done it this way. Or, you need to really talk to this person or so on and so forth. And so that's happened a couple of times. And I don't know how many more opportunities for this to happen there will be, but I really want to learn how to better manage those communication channels.
Yeah, I mean, what you're describing to me honestly just sounds fairly like a fluke, but I'm not hearing like consistent repeating pattern. Am I missing that?
It's happened about three times now.
Oh, well, that's
in the course of, so it was like transition to the payroll system. You know, we talked to the one person at corporate and then distributed information out to our employees. Okay, this is the steps that needs to happen. And then we got another update. This is, because we had a couple of people go through the process. Oh, no, this didn't happen, or you needed this first. Then it happened again with respect to the benefits, medical and health benefits. Then it happened again now with the 401k. So we're seeing this pattern happen when we're transitioning the individual systems. And I don't know how to really work with that corporate side of things and essentially throw some muscle around or become a thorn in their side to say, hey, look, you're making us look terrible to our team. And that's the last thing that we want to do is look terrible to our team because they have all the faith and confidence. And if they don't have the faith and confidence in us that this is a good decision for the organization, they're going to start looking elsewhere. And that's the worst possible thing that can happen.
Yeah, sure. are you able to triangulate the source of the problem, or do you feel like each time it happened, it was different?
It really hones in on a singular person, I would say, at corporate level. That houses a lot of information and is quick to respond information off. Now, I don't want this person to become my enemy because they hold a good amount of power, not necessarily power, but just influence as far as the generation and communication of information. They are, all intents and purposes, a hub of information for us. And she's, for the most part, been very good. But in these, when it gets down to that nitty gritty, she makes statements that are inaccurate. And then somebody else above her comes in and maybe makes a correction or gives her some additional information. And she's quick to caveat to say, I'm not the expert on this. But then she purports and puts herself out there with information that is not accurate. So,
yeah, you now have data that basically says, especially if she flags for you, this isn't my expertise. Yeah. And just say, no problem. Let's just talk to whoever the expert is.
Okay.
And just flag that for her. And periodically check in and go, hey, do you feel like you are the expert on this subject? So if she's giving you information, she's like this, 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 and you just as a matter of due diligence, get in the habit of saying, okay, great, that's helpful. Do you feel like you're the expert kind of in this area? Yeah. And if she says, absolutely, this is totally my domain. Awesome. Okay. Do you need to get approvals from anybody? No, I'm good. Okay. So you're just going to kick the tires every once in a while.
Okay. Just keep validating her sources or her.
Yeah. And just find out whether she, because it sounds like she's saying to you, I'm not an expert. If she says that, your next question is, awesome, no problem. Who's the expert?
Right. Okay.
Who do we need to talk to? Because I really want to run this to ground.
It's usually after the fact that she says I'm not the expert. So, but now that we've noticed the pattern, I see where you're going, Shane. As far as let's proactively ask her, are you the end all be all on this? Is there somebody else that we need to approach or talk to before we distribute this out and give her a little bit more insight?
Yeah, even just asking instead of is there, you could say, can we also talk to some other people just to verify everything that I'm make sure that I'm understanding it all correctly. Is there anybody else we can talk to? Rather than should we talk to somebody, you might want to, especially if it's going to be kind of a company-wide communication that if you get wrong, you know, it's going to have a big impact, then I would try to offer and ask if you can talk to somebody else.
Now, what about damage control on our end? How should I be messaging, or what's the language I should be using to the employees that were inevitably inconvenienced? We haven't had any major pitfalls, just more of confusion and or, well, I did this, like you said, and it turned out I have to do this, or I've got, you know, that kind of thing. What should be the messaging?
I think it's okay just to be honest and say there was a misunderstanding between corporate and us. We're learning how to manage that better. It's part of the transition. We really apologize for that. And if there's some material consequence to them, make it up to them. And if there isn't, they'll get over it. You know, so I think you're fine. I think people, and I think one of the things that is so critical in change management is just expectation setting.
Yeah.
And repeating the same message over and over so that you can just simply say to people, hey, we're excited about this acquisition. We think it's absolutely in our interest. Bear with us. There may be some, you know, complexity in the changes and some confusion every once in a while. Just alert us anytime you sense it and we'll fix it for you. And that way people come in with the expectation that, yeah, we're going to have some glitches along the way. And it's not a function of incompetence. It's a fun, they know that. And that's how you, in general, that's how you get around the fear of being incompetent. Meaning people looking at you going, you guys know what you're doing. If you say, I know this is coming, it's not going to be smooth, it's going to be challenging, there's going to be some disruption, it shows you know what you're doing. And then they go, oh, look at that, there's disruption and it's inconvenient and I don't like it. And he told me that would happen. Yeah. And if they come and complain, they're like, how come we're doing this? So, well, you remember I mentioned this is kind of what would happen. There's no way to prevent that. Every acquisition, every merger has a version of this. And we want you to just keep raising your hand every time you sense it and see it, and we will run it to ground and take care of it. And that's how you calm the system if there is anxiety. I think what you're doing is being proactive. I don't think there's a lot of major problems that you're observing here. You're just trying to be proactive, which is smart.
Thank you.
But that's how you do it. Manage expectations by telling people to expect glitches.
Got it.
And I would say you've been at it for, you know, since whatever time it was.
8 months, roughly. Yeah.
8 months. You know, and you've had three instances. That's pretty good, actually. That's a pretty good track record for an acquisition. Okay. You only have three instances. You know, I would have told you if we were coaching 8 months ago, I would have said expect 4 or 5 months of really messy stuff. And the fact that you don't have that is great news.
Well, that's good. That's good perspective. I appreciate that. We're a younger population. I've been with this organization pretty much my entire career, so we haven't had much perspective or experience with acquisition. So it's really helpful to hear that, Shane, because, you know, for us, it's like, you know, we drive towards some level of almost perfection with our clients. And that's really been kind of our goal from an expertise level and holding ourselves to a higher standard. So, you know, there is that expectation that, you know, we're going to be, you know, in a similar, you know, kind of strike zone, you know, with respect to this type of change. So it's nice to hear that, you know, as far as acquisitions goes, we're doing a good job managing it. And we obviously communicated that there was going to be glitches and there's going to be things and appreciate the patience and so on and so forth. But to know that, you know, we're still riding on the higher end of, you know, performance.
You have that. You also have a low complexity acquisition, which is helpful. You know, you, there are acquisitions that are hostile takeovers, and so, you have one that's a lot simpler, which is good.
Yeah, and we're dealing mostly with the human resource components of things. Operationally, we've kept them out of our kitchen, so to speak, at this point in time, just given them, you know, the production data and the data sources that they need. So I think that would have been far more disruptive and, as you said, messy.
Very much so. Yeah, that's when things do get a little tricky. Also, reward systems or things like that can create pretty significant disruption in morale and all that fun stuff, which you don't have. So that's great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So what's your perspective? And I don't mean to kind of dominate this conversation by any means, and we can go in any direction. You know, we have the capability now because we had old company in existence for about a month during this calendar year, this tax year. And we have some leftover retained earnings within that organization that we can distribute out or pay to employees that have been identified as, you know, key employees or so on and so forth. And, you know, from a transition or change management standpoint, do you like to utilize monetary awards to say, hey, thank you for going through this transition? Does it signal that there was, you know, a fortuitous monetary event to the organization and that we're returning this? So if we're getting this amount of money, then, you know, the partners must have gotten way more exponential amounts of money. You know, what's kind of your idea as far as, or thought as far as kind of giving back a little bit or recognizing people that, you know, are, you know, very, very important? I'd say everybody's very important, but there's obviously, you know, a high level of, you know, senior leaders and things like that, that, you know, are detrimental, or their loss would be detrimental to our success.
I'm happy to dig in on that, and I'll do that after I check in with JD. So let me go over to JD, and then we can come back to you. JD, how are you doing?
Doing all right.
Good. You have something you want to check in on today?
Well, kind of going along with what Colin had mentioned, kind of in culture and core value area, I feel as a company, we're starting to move away from that. And I know it has a lot to do with our communication and that it's become very faint, or there's a lack of communication at this point. I feel it's mostly from my position to everyone else. I've been pulled into managing a store and trying to get those things going and training some pharmacists that I haven't been able to check in with this. It's kind of like those stores have been running really well, so I'm just letting them go and trying to let them keep up with that. And because I'm not checking in regularly with them, they're starting to fall away from the culture.
What's an example of culture that they're falling away from?
What's that?
What's an example of culture they're falling away from?
So it's really falling with our four core values: customer service, teamwork, dedication, and respect. And okay. So we're finding some dedication lacking, both in hiring people and them wanting to stay on with us. We have the last week company wide, we've probably had about 10 to 20 people leave our company and go on to something else. All of them
said the company again. How many people are in it?
In our company, they're a little bit over 500.
Okay.
Oh, well, okay.
It just feels like I've been seeing this over the last few years about every time, like spring or fall. I don't see it as much winter to spring or summer to or like into spring into fall, but I see it in those kind of middle times of the year. And so we've had a few leave there, and some of them have been longtime employees, 20 plus years. And they're moving on to something completely different. So I don't know if it's just their natural, hey, I need something different at this point. I've been doing this for a really long time and I want something different. Or if it's, hey, I'm seeing.
How many of these people are in your purview, under your command, so to speak?
Out of those 20, probably, I'll say 4 or 5 of them are.
Okay. So, you guys do exit interviews?
Yes, we do.
Okay. I mean, that should tell you a lot, right? Like what's going on there? Do you feel like you're getting good data from those exit interviews?
The ones that we're able to have, yes. Some of them are like we had somebody on Monday call and say, I'm done today and I'll bring my stuff in and I'm done. And we're not going to get an exit interview from her because she's done at this point. So
is there any indication, evidence as to why somebody like that would leave? She leave clues along the way, or is it just like suddenly vanish?
And talking with some of them, it was kind of building up to it. I guess some of the closer people that were working here, and it just kind of built up over time and finally happened. So I don't know if there was any intervening or no intervening we could do, but out of most of the people that are leaving underneath my supervision, it's supposed to be on for bigger and better jobs. And some of them are actually even staying within our company and just going to our sister company, but it's still leaving from underneath, I guess, kind of my oversight with that. So.
Got it. Okay. So, so you're talking primarily like the symptom when somebody says there's a culture problem. Culture is always born of behaviors. So behavior is what culture is, instead of kind of an amorphous set of values or feelings. It's what are the concrete behaviors that you're seeing that you don't want to see anymore, that you'd like to see more of. And so one of the concrete things you'd like to see is less turnover. But it also sounds like this is somewhat seasonal. So I don't want to state a problem where there isn't one. But but the first thing I'm curious about is I would do a check-in, if I'm sure you have, but I if you haven't, make sure, I know you're a super slam, but check in with them and say, you know, this is where I am. This is what's going on. How are you guys feeling about this? This is an observation I have. Am I reading this right?
Mm-hmm.
And just see what they have to say. You know, I think one of the things that's interesting about the culture you lead in is it's not yet a feedback rich culture, you know, and it's going to take time to create that. And what I mean by feedback rich is you are getting lots of feedback about what's happening and not happening on the ground. That's a feedback rich culture. And it's a hard thing to achieve, to be clear. Power and hierarchy naturally inhibits feedback-rich cultures. So you've got to become a really skilled communicator in order for the kind of the seeds to be planted that people go, you know, when I have a problem, JD's the guy to go talk to because he really listens, knows how to work with it, helps reset me, knows how to get things fixed, is available. If they go, yeah, I don't want to tell JD, he doesn't really seem to listen very much. He's pretty focused on other things. When I do try to push on him, I just feel like he's like middle management squawking at the boss who, you know, he doesn't really understand. Like those are the things, if those narratives are emerging, that's what will determine whether or not you have any accurate read on your dashboard, which is how fast are you flying and how high are you flying? Are you ascending or descending? These are the tricks that all managers and leaders have to figure out how to get that data. And you should expect that some of that data is going to be obstructed. You're not going to get all of it unless you have built a very feedback-rich culture. And I don't think you guys have yet. So I'll just pause there and ask, does any of that make sense? Do you relate to anything I just said there?
Yes, that makes sense. And I do relate to that. And I'm on probably the communication line, if you would. I'm not the... They won't come to me at all and they don't think I don't do anything, but I'm not at that other end where people will seek me out for that. They do see that I'm too busy at times and so they don't want to bother me with things.
Right.
And so I've got to try to open that up more and make it as full as my plate is or as overflow with it is. It still has to seem to them and perceived by them that they can come and get me at any point in time.
Yeah, right. That's tricky. Well, you're in a kind of a pinch right now. I just want to also follow up on the conversation we had last week about the termination you were going to proceed with. How did that end up going?
So that was scheduled for this week, which then it was scheduled for yesterday. And then the pharmacist let me know on Monday that they had switched shifts, so it didn't work with my schedule. So it is actually for next Friday.
Okay.
That was the soonest I could get it worked back into my schedule.
And did you, what did you decide to do about that? I mean, I know I gave a recommendation, but what did you guys decide to do?
I wanted to come into him with some options, let him know that we are needing to go in a different direction, but here's option one. You could stay on and be a floater pharmacist for us and work in this area. Or kind of the other option is I can give you a couple weeks here, maybe 4 weeks, and you can find something else and we can just part ways at that point and go in that direction. there have been other things that come up since we talked last that even push this further. I actually got a little scared on Monday because my first review that I did with the pharmacist, she put in her 2-week notice at another location. And so I'm like, okay, do I make this move? Do I not? Because now I'm short a pharmacist again. And so,
You're saying you gave a review and they...
I sat down and I said, okay, hey, we're going to do your annual review. And she's like, well, can I talk first? And I said, okay. She's like, well, I'm putting in my 2-week notice. I was like,
ah. Oh.
That was my first review of this annual review timeframe. So,
oh my gosh.
off to a great start
this year. How awful. That's terrible. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. And it was one where training was lacking for her. And she actually switched out of retail pharmacy and into hospital pharmacy. So she's trying to go in a completely different route at this point. So we'd been working on it for about 6 months or so, going back to the nephew of the owners that's her man or is the manager for that store, and kind of the lack of leadership and lack of conversations that he's having. She's seeing some of that on the wall, and I don't think wants to be a part of that or be part of a team that's not being led very well. So,
and did you ever get a chance to have a conversation with the family member above you about this?
Yeah, that was my second review of this year. so I went from that to that. It was 3 hours long.
Oh my gosh. Wait, well, this is with the descendant, so to speak, yeah. the heir to the throne.
Yeah, Taylor. So with the fifth generation pharmacist. Yeah. So sat down and I actually pulled him out of the store and we went off to a separate office space. So he wasn't bugged by staff or anything of that nature or had any feelings of getting back to that. We had complete privacy with it and just let him know how important it was. And went into line or 15 review items specifically and gave him specifics on what he needed to do, how it needed to change. He was actually decently self-aware of a lot of them, surprisingly, with the communication struggles that he was having, but he didn't know how to fix them. He kind of put a lot of it to, well, that's just the way I am. I'm not confrontational. I'm just happy-go-lucky. And work through that. So,
and you just leave it at that for now? Or did you say, well, that's not going to work?
Well, we gave him some homework. His uncle was more of the next time this happens, we'll do a coaching or we'll do a PIP at that point. Because I had suggested that to him before he'd met with him. And so I even let him know with that. I said, if this isn't improved in the next couple of weeks to month, we're doing a coaching, we're doing a PIP, and your job's on the line at this point.
Okay, good.
The staff pharmacist or whatever that may be. He was very hard to read because it just, I don't know that he was staring down a train engine coming at him, but he just didn't really have any emotion about it. He didn't really say, yeah, I got to work on it. He was just kind of like stunned.
You should go watch the Enneagram bonus training on the Enneagram 9. There's a video on the Enneagram 9. He strikes me as a 9 on the Enneagram, and that will help. And that explains.
And I've only been working with him for around a year right now, and I don't work with him every day, so I'm trying to see where that all fits in. But
yeah, I'll tell you right now, a 9 on the Enneagram tends to be a for sure avoid confrontation, be very affable and easygoing, be very agreeable. And also, if they're really stressed or overwhelmed or anxious, they don't tell their face. So they tend to look like it's no big deal, but it's quite overwhelming. It's quite difficult, but they just start like, okay, all right. Okay. And you're like, did you hear what I said? And when they try to give hard feedback with 9s, it's very funny. I'll go coach a 9 and I'll be like, you're going to need to have a hard conversation with this person. And here's how you have that conversation. And then I'll check in with them and I'll be like, how'd it go? Like, oh boy, I gave it to them. I really laid into them and they really, whoa, that was something else. That was an incredible conversation. Oh gosh. Never done anything like that before. And then I go talk to the person they talked to. And I was like, how'd that go? Were you doing okay? And it's like, yeah, fine. Why? I'm like, they had a conversation with you. Like, yeah, said I was doing a great job and everything was fine. And that's classic nine. Nines are literally, they're very, very avoidant. So they go in, they're like, I really have to have a conversation with you. And what I want you to know is, you know, it's a beautiful day, first of all. And I also, the thing that I like about you is you're like, what, at the end, it's so packaged in a giant pillow. You have no idea where the thing was. And so he may be a nine on the Enneagram, and that's probably a place to start with coaching, is to help him begin to understand that personality type has these traits. And that it, I'm not saying I know that for sure. I haven't diagnosed him. I'm just giving you a place to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that sounds good.
Good. Yeah. Okay, let me pause here, JD, for a few minutes. Let me jump over to Lisa too, and then we'll kind of do round robin. Come back to you, Colin, here in a minute. Lisa, how's it going?
Hey, Shane, how are you?
Okay. Colin, just so you know, Lisa does, she runs a nonprofit in Alabama for kids. It's a school that she runs. Colin's a new client, chief operating officer of an insurance company out in California.
Okay, good to meet you.
No, likewise.
So, how are you doing, Lisa?
Well,
I gave you a hard conversation last time we talked.
Well, you know, the truth is always welcome. Moving forward, I think I've got kind of a question. It made me a little bit of what you were talking with JD about. I have somebody I've hired for the office manager. And she is coming to us from a Head Start, and she's worked at that Head Start for 16 years. And, you know, loyalty is kind of a big thing to me. I get kind of hung up on it a little bit. If I put this time and energy into you, you know, I feel like it, you know, it should be a big deal. It is to me anyways. Anyways, she chose to accept the job as office administrator. And what it sounded like when she was in the interview is that she just really wanted to be able to move up. That's kind of the position she was at Head Start. But she was really doing the job of director. And right now I'm not where I really want to just hire somebody off the street to be the director. I kind of want to see, you know, get in here. Let's see how you are. And I'm not going to introduce you to parents as the director until I know who you are. But my ultimate goal, Shane, is to remove myself from the day-to-day operations of the preschool, open up a couple more sites, and expand our nonprofit. This is my ultimate goal.
Great.
And so getting somebody that can take on this and it's been a great opportunity. I've been forced with COVID to not lead from my desk quite as much as I had for 15 years. And you know, really get in there and get those things nailed down and you know, just work through those. What's bothering me is she interviewed, she accepted the job now almost a month ago. And she told me at that time that her supervisor was out of town that week. So it'd be the next week before she could tell her that she was leaving. So she basically needed 3 weeks to work out her notice. And my professional development coach that we use for staff development has strong ties with the Head Start that she's coming from. And of course, this lady came to a staff training on Friday. I asked her to at least attend that. I go ahead and get her background check processed and, you know, moving forward, since this was going to be a longer drawn out. Well, what it boils down to is you know, Monday, my professional development coach finds out just by happenstance that she hasn't turned in her notice yet. And that she's just been calling out sick this whole time and taking all that leave. And, you know, my concern now is that she's not being honest with them. And, you know, I've been selected to go to a training in Texas the second week in November. And, you know, it was one you had to apply for and get selected for a certification I'm working on for early childhood. And so I'm already feeling uneasy that I'm got this girl coming on. She's going to be here for a week and then I'm going to be gone for a week. And now I'm finding out that she hasn't given a notice. Is she going to give a notice? Is she lying to him? So I'm not wanting to put time and energy into somebody that's dishonest, but I don't know what's my, is it really, I don't know. I mean, she worked for him for 16 years. Do they not deserve a notice?
You know? Okay. So, it's entirely possible that you don't have accurate information. It's possible that this is hearsay. So I wouldn't necessarily make a decision about their honesty or dishonesty until you actually have real data, because this is hearsay. Second thing I would say is it's not uncommon. It does happen in the world where people will go out and get a new job just to leverage their existing job. So that's possible. It's also possible that she thought about the director thing and then you're not willing to give it. And so that signals to her a lack of trust. And so she's going, you know, I don't know that I want to go work for somebody who doesn't trust me. And, you know, I would ask the same question. If they're qualified to be a director and you need a director, why wouldn't you hire them as a director? So if you're not able to do that, that's a red flag as an employee looking to be employed. You know, if I'm a VP level person and I'm going to go apply to a job or a VP and I'm like, well, we don't know you yet, so we're not going to hire you as a VP. We're going to hire you as a manager. I'd be like, I don't know if that's the right fit. So it's possible you signaled something that caused her to hesitate and stutter step and go, I'm not sure this is right for me. So, you know, those are just a few things for you to be curious about. I'm not saying I know which one it is. It's entirely possible she lied. I don't know. But at this point, I would say you don't have enough data to make that decision. What you probably want to do is just reach out and say, hey, I want to nail some things down. I want to get this buttoned up and have clarity on both sides about when we're doing this, how, all that stuff. And I do think you want to ask yourself the question, if you need a director and you're hiring someone, but you're not willing to hire them as a director, why are you hiring them? It is very normal to hire people into the role that you need.
You're right. The last time I did that, the person was completely inept. And, you know, thank goodness I had not introduced her to the parents yet that, she was the director. I had introduced her to the staff as she was the director. I think part of it is maybe a control part on my end that I'm not ready just to, hey, here's your job and, you know, let me know how I can help you and be in that supportive role versus in the driver's seat. I'll admit to that. I'll admit that I'm not ready to give up control. And it is a lot, Shane. I mean, to run a school of any size, there's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, but just to be clear, what you're actually talking about is succession planning, not just hiring a role. So you're talking about getting you replaced. That is a very different process than just hiring someone and going, go. I would absolutely say you can hire a director. Maybe it's not her, but somebody that you want to invest some time, effort, and energy in. And then you should expect that sometimes these things don't work and it isn't personal. It's just part of running an organization is there's turnover, there's bad hires, they exist, there's no way to prevent them. But that doesn't, should not then influence you to live your life looking through the rearview mirror, where you believe that every new thing you're going to try is just going to be like the last thing you tried. That isn't the case. So you've got to start getting a little more hopeful. And also it's okay to say, I'm going to hire you as a director and here's the succession plan. You're going to get the title of director. You're going to get the pay of director. And we're going to spend the next 3 months. You're going to actually shadow me. And even though you're in the role, your authority will not be granted yet, but you'll have the role. You'll have the everything, but I need about 3 months to get you fully up to speed before we then begin transitioning. So you're going to shadow me for a while. Then I'm going to start to shadow you for the next 3 months. And then after 6 months, we should be able to establish a new agreement on who has what roles and who has what authorities. And we're going to use that period of time, that 6 months where you shadow me and I shadow you, to get really clear on what we're both best at. And that's a really normal, healthy way. It doesn't have to be 6 months. You could do it in 3 months. You could do it. Depends on the complexity of the role. It depends on their experience level. It depends on your own capacity to you know, release some of this. It certainly depends on the risk to the students. So there's a lot of factors that go into it. But I guess what I'm trying to do is paint a vision for you that says, this is a positive future for me, and I don't have to be anxious or worried about it. I think sometimes because of your negative experiences you've been having, you'll tend to be more conservative and anxious, and that actually evokes more of that in the system. So you've got to go in with some positivity. You got to go with a little bit of a sense of, hey, this might not work out, and it doesn't mean that it was a mistake or a failure. It's just a normal part of being a business owner. These things happen. And yeah, there's some cost associated, but we're going to recover. That stuff happens. So kind of de-escalate some of the anxiety. And then the shadowing idea where you shadow, she shadows, however long you want to do that for, that's designed to get you comfortable so that you can start to observe, okay, this is how that person shows up. This is how that person relates and operates. And you both know it's an open conversation where you both know you're doing that for that reason. So I'll just pause there and let you interact with what I just said. How's that sound?
I think that that's really good thought. I do have one other issue. I do have a very key member of our team that the last time I named the director, she got really, really upset. I think in some ways she wants to be the director, and in some ways she doesn't want to be the director. She's capable of it in a lot of ways, but she has a lot of composure issues sometimes. And you know, to me, that can be a big, big issue. So I haven't really, I've put some time into her, put her some effort into it. I've put her through a Brené Brown course, just trying to help her with some of her leadership skills. She is making progress, but I will tell you, if I brought in somebody and said this is the director, she would get upset about that, because she would.
And what would happen if she got upset?
I don't know.
Okay, so here's the deal: your job is not to take responsibility for how people feel. There are going to be times. And now, again, so I'm going to just tell you again, Lisa. I want to remind you, my coaching with you is so different than most other leaders, because you live on this one side of a polarity that is so compassionate and kind and giving and concerned, partly because it's nonprofit, partly because you're serving children. I get all that. But it creates dysfunction if you don't have the balanced polarity of clarity, directive, and kind of a more masculine, I don't mean male, I mean masculine energy. It's just like, it's clear, it's simple, it's not your problem, not my problem. All that kind of stuff, I think, is what I want to keep pushing you towards. So yes, it's important how people feel. That matters. But if you let somebody's feelings govern the entire system, you're doing a disservice to the system. So the first thing you need to ask is, can you lose that person?
It would be a challenge if we lost that person.
Okay. Next thing you need to ask is, do you think you'll lose that person?
Possibly.
Okay. And the other thing to ask is, if they stay, are they able to manage themselves, and can you have hard conversations with them?
It's a challenge. She likes to overtalk. You know, I think that's the biggest issue, is if we were able to have conversations, we probably could have moved through some of this by now, and she probably would be the director.
So I'm going to give you a language cue when you're dealing with somebody who overtalks. Once you feel like you've understood them, simply interrupt them and say, I'm going to ask your permission to give you some input before we continue the conversation. And what that does is it disrupts their kind of stream of consciousness talking. So your assumption is not a person should be able to share as much as they want for as long as they want. Your assumption is, I'm here to guide and manage a conversation. If I'm the leader and the manager, I'm going to help guide and manage this conversation. I think I've heard enough. I'm going to jump in. I'm not going to say, stop talking. I'm not going to say, I've heard enough. I'm going to say, I'm going to ask you to pause for just a minute because I need to respond to what you just said. Or I'm going to just pause you for a minute because I think I understand what's going on. I'd like a chance to share that with you and then tell you what I think we need to do. Or you can say, in the interest of time, I want to make sure that we get to the point that we're really here to get to. Those are all different cues and phrases that you can use that will make sure you're having, remember, the whole point of this is a problem only exists in the absence of the right conversation. And when you learn how to have the right conversations with these people consistently and repeatedly, the right conversation, which is everything we've been talking about, that kind of like clarity, directive, accountability. When you have those consistently over time, these problems start to go away.
I agree.
So, I mean, I would sit her down and say, I would warn her and just say, hey, just want to let you know, I know you've had some interest in the director role. At this point, what I've decided is I don't feel confidence that you're the right fit for that role. And I think you've done great work and I think you're a valuable part of the team, but I just wanted to let you be aware of that because there's going to be some changes coming and I wanted you to be the first to know because I know that that was really important to you. And that way you've respected her in advance. You've given her a chance to understand a change is coming and you've been really direct and clear about it. And if she's upset about it, that's fine because she's been warned. And then when you bring the new person in, there's no surprise. Mm-hmm. And you also honor her a little bit by saying, I wanted to tell you first.
Yeah, I definitely think that that would be meaningful to her.
Yeah. So I think again, this is about you going and imagining, you know, I want to get you a bracelet that says, what would Jocko do? You know, that Navy SEAL commander.
Yeah.
I need you to be wearing that bracelet a lot. What would Jocko do? How would he approach? You know, and again, if I were coaching Jocko, I'd be like, what would Lisa do? He probably needs to soften up a little bit. But in your case, you need a WWJD bracelet.
I think I'll make me one.
Good. And every time you have one of these conversations, I want you to have a strong backbone. It doesn't mean you have to be mean. It doesn't mean you have to be closed down or petty. It's you're a big person. You're a strong person. And you're there to protect and defend the kids more than anything. And then you're there to make sure that the teachers and the administrators are being properly supported to serve the vulnerable population.
So going forward, is there any particular thing that you suggest? You said to touch base with the new hire.
Absolutely. Get clarity on the new hire and what it is that you guys need to form an agreement. When can I expect you? How, et cetera. I think you need to challenge yourself a little bit on the director thing. I think one of the best things you could do, if you're able to do it, I would think through what is your succession plan that I just laid out for you. That's the first step. How many months do you want her to shadow you? How many months do you want to shadow her? Present that to her as her onboarding. Like, this is what's going to happen. And as part of that, I've been thinking about it. I want to give you the director title. You know, I've hired you. That's what I want you to, the role you play. We're going to have you do that. After 6 months, I think we'll be ready for you to function fully as that. You may not be functioning as that right away, but you'll get the full benefit of being the director. I need you to kind of learn with me, though.
I think one of my hangups is going to be that if she is truly, truly lying, I mean, she's basically telling these people that she has shingles and that's why she can't come to work. If that's really and truly what's happening, I don't know if there's a way to find out without it being.
I wouldn't spend a lot of time on that. That's gossip at this point. And I'm not saying that it's not true. I'm saying you have no way to verify it. And I would also say people don't tell things to their employer all the time. It's not lying. It's just discretion. Maybe she is lying outright. I'm just saying. I don't know that. And I also know that it's not a personal affront if somebody isn't going, hey, I'm going to a job interview because I want to leave the company. No, I'm going to a doctor's appointment because I'm not going to tell you that I'm going on a job interview. People do that all the time. It doesn't make them like flawed characters.
I think my concern is in it's a trust issue. If I'm going to go down the direction of making her the director,
I fully understand that.
Red flag here that she may not be an honest person.
Then I'll tell you this. I don't believe that your choice is to go halfway in. You go all in or you don't do it at all. Don't treat somebody that way. That kind of half-heartedness, you will create major problems in that relationship. If you cannot trust this person, if you've decided you're not sure, do not hire them. Only hire them if you've decided to trust them. Now, I'm not telling you that you should or shouldn't trust them. I'm saying that when you decide to trust somebody, You've decided to trust yourself. They can't betray you because you've decided to trust yourself. You've said, you know what? I get it. They're static. I'm going to make a call. I'm going to do my best. I'm going to make the best of it. If it doesn't work out, no big deal. These things happen. Uh-huh. Where you say, I need somebody I really trust and I don't trust this person, then don't hire them. Rescind the invitation. But this halfway thing is not going to be good for you.
I agree. That's why I'm saying, I mean, I don't even know how you rescind it. So you just call her and say, hey,
decided. You can certainly rescind it and say, hey, I'm sorry to see it here. I'm sorry to say this, but I'm getting word back that you're sharing information that is not accurate. You could expose the lie if you want. You could confront the lie if you want. You could say, I don't know if it's true. I don't need you to tell me if it's true, but I'll tell you right now, the organization that I run, I can't even have the appearance of that impropriety. You could do that. You know, I'm not saying you have to do that. I'm just saying there's a lot of different ways to unwind something, just like she could unwind it and say, oh, actually my current employer gave me a better offer. You could say, hey, something about how this has gone hasn't set right with me. And I don't feel comfortable continuing the conversation. I think I need to go a different direction.
Gotcha.
But the first step is decide if you want to trust her. If you decide you're going to trust her, then fully trust her until she truly proves you otherwise that she is an untrustworthy person. Mm-hmm. And I know that's hard for you, but that's my best advice for you is don't go halfway on this.
Gotcha.
And then if you trust her, develop a onboarding plan that she can agree to. Give her the director title, go all in, don't go halfway in. And then have the conversation with the other person preparing her. That's the sequence of events. You have stages and gates you got to go through.
Okay.
Sound good?
Sounds good.
Okay. I'm going to check in with you in a little bit here, but I'm going to go back to Colin.
I just had a comment and more for Lisa and get your thoughts on this, Shane, too. It sounds like the person that could potentially get upset if you brought in a new director would have a lot of interactivity with this director, or this director would have a lot of interactivity with everybody in the organization. Shane, what are your thoughts on bringing that person, the person after you have that conversation or during the conversation of, hey, I'm going to bring somebody in because you're not quite ready to be the director. What about bringing them into the fold in the hiring process of the new director, getting their buy-in to the new person that's coming on board and having this more of a collaborative or a collective type decision?
It's a great strategy in certain contexts. It probably doesn't work now because Lisa's already extended the offer. So it would be performative rather than.
Right. If it doesn't work out with the person that we're trusting or not trusting.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, I think, Lisa, there's some value in what Colin is suggesting. The only reason that I'd be a little hesitant about it is I wouldn't want to flag or signal to her too much power if she's been a bad actor in the system. You know, if you're dealing with somebody who's just really awesome and a great partner and just lacks some critical skills, then it makes a lot of sense to have them interview the person with you and get to know them. You're like, hey, I know you wanted this. It's not going to work, but I really want your involvement in who we choose because I know it's going to have a big impact on you and I care about how it's going to impact you. So I want you to be a part of I want you to be an important data point in the decision making. It's not your decision to make, but I care about your data point. That's a valid thing to do if you trust that person to be able to give you feedback that is not informed by their jealousy and envy. If their feedback is just going to be governed by jealousy and envy, you're wasting a lot of emotional energy at that point. That's an immature leader and an immature person in your system, and you do not want to manage to the lowest common denominator.
Right.
You want to call your organization the highest common denominator. You want to reward people who are at the highest common denominator and show that. Because that's what you tolerate or don't tolerate.
Got it.
But Lisa, Colin's idea is a really good one if you feel good about that person.
I think that it would be to the point of if nobody would be good enough.
Yeah, then I would say skip it and be okay with her possibly losing her, I mean. And also be prepared for her to try to sandbag that leader and you may have to exit her. You know, if you have somebody who's full of envy in your system, it is not worth it. Yeah. It's a bad thing to have. So Lisa, just reminding you, everything we're talking about is We're working in the emotional system. And
exactly.
There are habits and behaviors that you have had over years that have cultivated an emotional system where people, both you attract people who like to complain and who are unreliable, and people feel entitled to doing that. Mm-hmm. And that could be just because of the emotional system you've created because you didn't have your WWJD bracelet on. And now we've got it on. And so we're going to give it time. It's going to take some time. But if you can do it consistently, repeatedly over time, you're going to attract way better people that are better for your kids, that are better for you. But you do have to confront your own fears also. You've got certainly some fears and anxiety around this that's got to be cleared.
I agree with that. I definitely agree. I think it's just, it's a lot of moving parts, and it's a lot of, just the dynamics is, you would think it would be so complex, but it's very, a very complex thing.
It can be complex if you want it to be, but it doesn't have to be. And I think that's maybe just a tiny bit of a little bit of a red herring for this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clear and straightforward what you have to do. It's not complex what you have to do. There are risks associated with what you have to do. That part is what you're managing.
Uh-huh.
So you've got to be able to manage the risks you're taking. And there are certain risks you should take and certain risks you shouldn't take. So that's part of leadership in general. And that's why I think this issue is not that complex. You can do it. If you can manage your own anxieties and get clear about what you're willing to do and not do, it doesn't have to be complicated.
Gotcha.
You want to show that you're not afraid of what people think and feel, but you still care about it. Okay. Colin, let me dig in on your thing.
Can I switch it now that I've heard kind of
sure.
some of the things that JD and Lisa
yeah.
talked about?
Yeah, sure.
Since we're diving into the employee issues, which seems to govern and direct all of our days.
Yes.
I actually have a situation where an employee really likes to exhibit her control over people. She likes to play the role of the boss, even though she's in a middle management type role. She doesn't manage any people per se, but there are people that she works with that are both above her and below her. And she has become a bit of a thorn in our side. She's kind of oscillated over time. She started off in kind of this role. We were able to really help her and coach her and get her into a more very reflective type of mindset where she's kind of seeing how our actions are breeding and creating other reactions from other people, and how her voicing her control or trying to put her thumb down on people is not how she wants to be received, or how she can, really further the goals and the values of our organization. She recently did a life change move and moving from the LA area over out to Denver. That's been a massive change in her life, and we're seeing a lot of these old habits coming to fruition or coming up again. And they're coming in full force in ways that they were 3 years ago, and it seems like she's taken massive steps back. So the leader or supervisor of this team is like, I don't know what to do anymore. We've tried really establishing very consistent communication, setting the objectives, having her, be a part of driving her day or in her goals and her career path and so forth. But she, put another employee, one of our newest employees who's at an entry level, in tears on Friday because she came and said, you're not being this, you're not doing this, you're not doing this, really acting like she's her boss and she is not anywhere close to being her boss. So thoughts, suggestions, please.
Yeah, so for sure, review the modules 2 and 3.
Okay.
How to have hard conversations and how to have performance conversations are going to be really critical. So make sure you're doing that. That's just foundational stuff.
Yeah.
It sounds to me, though, like what you're dealing with is you're not able to have this conversation with her. Her supervisor needs to be speaking to her, correct?
It can go either way. I have a really close relationship with her as well, as far as our interactivity. And so we kind of take a collaborative approach, so to speak, where I've had conversations with her. Her supervisors had other conversations, and we kind of worked together.
Okay, so if it feels serious enough, the two of you can sit down with her together. And again, yeah. I'm going to give you some stuff that you want to take with a grain of salt, because I may not know all the
sure.
details.
Absolutely. Probably
time to drain the cup, but I'll give you some examples. One is with somebody who's like that, who's a fairly direct communicator and who sounds like they communicate in ways that are unhelpful. There's a phrase that I really like, which is, hey, we're not sure what's going on, but your communication has become ballistic.
Okay.
And you put someone in tears. That can't happen. So let's start talking about what's going on, because this doesn't work. So it's just that. I mean, you can really start at that. Sure. That's if you want to come in hard and fast.
Yeah.
And if you're feeling like this is really disruptive and it's really problematic and we need to cure it soon, then that's an appropriate thing. If you feel like it's like, this is a one-off and there's maybe a couple times it's happened, but it's not like a repeating behavior we've confronted her on ever before.
No.
Then you got to be smart.
Yeah. We need to come at it hard.
You've come in hard before?
We have. I wouldn't say that direct, Shane, to be honest. And
yeah. I think you're a high culture company.
Yeah.
And high culture companies are known to be somewhat indirect.
Yeah.
Because they care about how everybody feels, which, by the way, I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah.
But what they don't realize is, you know, there's a polarity, which was exactly what Lisa and I were talking about. The polarity is directness and compassion, or accountability and compassion, or whatever, right? And so high culture organizations or nonprofits have a tendency to be far more on the compassion side of the equation. Whereas it's possible that JD's organization maybe has that, maybe middle of the road. And then there's like the military, which has, you know, zero compassion, right?
Right.
And so yours may be on that side. And what that means is sometimes bad behavior gets tolerated for longer than it should.
Agreed.
And so really clean, direct comments about behavior don't apply or assign intention or motive, and merely put up a mirror that shows the behavior, the impact of that behavior, and why that doesn't work. And then get curious about how she is going to change that and what you need to do in order to help her. But don't be overly helpful. You know, you've got to be able to say, hey, the way you're coming across and your communication is downright ballistic. You're like a missile. It put one of our people in tears. It's inappropriate. That shouldn't happen. And it's costing you credibility in the organization. And we want you to be aware that your credibility is now on the decline. We're not sure why this is happening, because you were doing really well for a while. Uh-huh. So I'm all ears. If you have some suggestions or ideas, or if there's some real frustrations that you feel we haven't addressed, I'm all ears to start. And then if she's like, yeah, this whole thing, the reason it's so frustrating is because of this acquisition, and it's caused this and this and this, and you don't even see any of it, and I'm so frustrated that nobody sees it. And you go, okay, we'll take some notes. Good, thanks for that. Appreciate it. We're going to take that under advisement. Now let's get back to how we're going to level set you. We've heard you. Those are all valid complaints and concerns. These ones we were addressing already. These ones we didn't know about. But we still need to come back to you and help you get your credibility back. We need you to restore some relationships.
Got it.
So you might come up with the things that you think are necessary, but you start with her. What do you think you would do to solve this? How would you resolve and cure and heal the breaches that have been made? Let her come up with some ideas.
Okay.
If one of the ideas isn't one of yours, tell her yours. Like, look, it's really obvious. The first thing you need to do is go and apologize to that person. Acknowledge that you overreached, that you stated in a way that was unhelpful, and that you regret the way you came across. Or whatever it is that you guys think is necessary to cure it. So again, I'm not giving you kind of the exact thing, but I'm giving you some things that you can then interpret through the context of your organization.
Mm-hmm.
Does that helpful? Sense.
Yeah, very. No, the sample language, and I always like to start with some type of, you know, see where the conversation goes, but start with something that you know is going to work.
Yes.
And so that's very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. And I think for you, one of the things that happens in your role when you're kind of the COO, it's very easy to get a more elaborative and complex and indirect and delicate. And I think in this case, you being delicate isn't going to serve you.
Right.
I think you being really clear and direct. The thing that people don't realize is that clarity is one of the things that drives employee engagement more than most things. People love clarity. And we, I've taught, the others have heard me say this, Colin, but I'm going to say it to you. When they rank order bosses in terms of their favorite boss to their least favorite boss, the least favorite bosses are always the nicest ones. Really nice bosses rank lower than even the a-holes because no one knows where they stand with a nice boss. They feel they don't have clarity because everything's always great and nice and fine, but they know that's not true because nothing in life is like that. And so the a-holes get ranked higher because at least I know where I stand. At least I don't have to guess what they're thinking. Obviously, the ones above them are the ones that are respectful and direct and provide clarity and are fearless in the face of people's emotions. And yet still find language and phrases that are respectful of those emotions. And there is a formula and a pattern to that that I teach in the Hard Conversations. So that's why I want you to start reviewing those modules so that you can start to get fluent in the way to think about these hard conversations.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
Well, and a quick comment to jump in on kind of both of those that I remember hearing a while back, and I think it's even a lyric in a song, is to be unclear is to be unkind.
Oh, interesting. I like that. That's a good phrase. Yeah, I like that. I'm going to use that. Thank you.
Or you can turn it the other way. The way I've heard it is clear as kind.
Yeah, there you go.
You got to be as clear as you can so that you know, it does, you're not doing them any favors by being unclear.
Yeah. And but what drives the lack of clarity usually is a desire to be kind. That's what's interesting.
It's
the want to be nice and not hurt feelings that leads to a lack of clarity. Mm-hmm. One of the great phrases that was said to me at one point is that, you know, when I was a classic nice boss, that was my pattern. And what a coach said to me once, they said was, Shane, you don't get an option of not hurting people's feelings in this role. So you get to decide, are you going to hurt them with your truth or hurt them with your lies? The choice is yours. And I was like, oh, okay. So the goal is not to hurt feelings. The goal is to give people truth in respectful ways. Good. Okay. Who else wants to chat? We got another 15 minutes. I'm happy to stick around for it. If you all feel you've had enough, we can close it out. But anybody else want to share, talk?
I guess I will. Sure. On the clarity component of things, you know, back to the kind of the original prompt, Shane, which was, you know, rewarding employees as they go through this transition. Lisa, just for your knowledge, we were recently acquired in February of this year by a larger organization. So my whole purpose in reaching out to Shane was change management and just and maintaining culture throughout this change. One of the opportunities that we may have is to reward certain employees or to drive certain things to the employees that have been instrumental in this change. And I wanted to get Shane's thoughts on how do you deliver those rewards? How do you, couch them or provide communication, you know, around those rewards so it doesn't trigger other thoughts or, you know, things that, oh, this must have been a huge windfall for the partners or a huge windfall for the organization, things of that nature.
Yeah, to answer that question, I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay.
Whatever they think about, people know that you're making money and they recognize that and they don't have any idea how much and it's fine. It's part of the deal. They're going to be focused. I've never had anybody who wasn't expecting a bonus when they get a bonus to be upset about that bonus.
Right. Okay.
You know, so if people aren't expecting it and you come in and you're like, hey, we just want to express our appreciation, you're going to win every time doing that. Okay. They're going to be grateful every time.
And are you a big fan of larger single monetary awards versus consistent monetary awards? Where do you stand on kind of the administration or delivery of those?
Yeah, so rewards is an interesting thing. I think in general, the psychology of rewards is, if this is a one-time event that took place and it's not going to happen ever again, then it's a one-time windfall for everybody. It's not an ongoing thing that you give out. If you're trying to reward ongoing behavior, then you would budget for that. And so I don't know what your compensation structure is, you know, so you'd have to kind of share more about that. But I'll just pause there for a minute. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. If it's tied to a specific event, I can see the utility of just having it be a one-time.
Absolutely.
And this is a one-time event.
Yeah, it's like a sales commission almost at that point. Yeah.
On a go. Yeah, go.
Can I ask as well, you know, a lot of the companies right now are going into this attendance bonus, you know, for arriving on time and coming to work. I know, you know, some companies are paying like $3 more an hour per pay period if you did that the whole pay period. What's your take on stuff like that?
Rewarding people for doing their job?
I actually think it's very useful if you have a really serious problem. So, you know, the philosophical architecture of compensation, there are two things I would say.
Yeah.
And people don't realize this about it. One is you should always make it feel to a person that they are getting more than 100% of what you agreed to. That's what feels like a bonus. So, for example, I had a leader once who was bonusing his employees, and his philosophy was, I want to incentivize them to work really, really hard and achieve all their objectives and beyond. That's what a bonus is. You know, I pay them a full salary to do their job. The only reason they get a bonus is if they did something amazing, then they get a bonus. And they'd only get 100% of that bonus if they did it unbelievably amazing. That's one philosophical approach. The other one that I recommend is when you say, here's what your salary is, and then you're going to be giving bonuses as well, assume you're going to give 100% bonuses unless they mess up. And what happens is people begin to rely on those bonuses, and they assume if they're giving all of their effort and they're doing everything they can, and these are the levers that are in their control, and they've hit all the levers in their control that your bonus is attached to, they should get 100% of that bonus. Doesn't matter what happened with the performance, they should get 100% of that bonus. And if you can't do that, then don't bonus people. So
I do agree, because in the past we've done bonuses like, hey, if we hit this goal, then you all will get this bonus. But, you know, if they didn't hit the goal, they didn't get the bonus. And they were disenfranchised because they didn't get anything.
Yeah. And so what I would say is you would set goals that are minimum target and stretch goals, and you would attach bonuses in advance to each one of those. Uh-huh. So that the minimum bonus is like a walk in the park. They're going to achieve it no matter what. They're going to get it. The target bonus is assuming most of the levers we can pull, we pull and we get it right. And a lot of things don't go right, you're going to get that. And then the stretch is, and you explain all of this to them, the stretch is, if every single planet aligned and every single lever we could possibly push, we do push, and everything, the outcome is this, then we get this bonus.
So that's
a psychology that allows not an all or nothing. It allows for levels of experience. But you want it to feel like getting it is, people, when they show up to work for another organization that are not entrepreneurs themselves, they expect to be paid what they think the agreement was. And the agreement is you're going to get a salary and you're going to get a bonus if you do your job. If that's the agreement, then if they did their job, they should get the 100% bonus. Docking people's bonus is literally like docking their pay. It's a very serious issue. So you want to be really careful when you start talking about bonuses. They have to be very clearly articulated.
So give me an example of what you would see a suggestion.
I'd have to know what the KPIs of your organization are, like the key performance indicators and the things that you want to reward. So a lot of it is like, for example, when a CEO has a team and that team is not functioning like a team, sometimes what he'll do is a set of bonus structure that is, if the team performs this, everybody gets the same. And then everybody knows, okay, we're like a team now, we have to do that. And then after a while, what that does is it reduces creativity and it creates groupthink. So you got to break that up again. It's okay, now you have separate bonuses again. So a lot of it is about what kind of thing are you trying to get? You're trying to get behaviors. That's the whole point of bonuses. You're trying to get behaviors from your team. What behaviors do you think they have full control over? And that's important too. Like if you're bonusing on things they have no ability to impact, it's not a great incentive. They need to have a high degree of control over the thing you're trying to bonus.
So if you were to say, let's just say at the end of X pay period, you would get a $500 bonus. But each time you came to work late and each time you called out, something was subtracted from that bonus. You're saying that's a bad model.
Right? I think that's a dangerous model. But you can say it probably a different way, which is you say, here's the bonus. It's $500. It's yours if you are on time 15 out of 20 times and you only call out twice. It's yours. You know, so you just make it fairly easy, but you get the behavior you need. And I'm just making up numbers, by the way. I don't know what you need.
I know.
So
yeah.
It would have to be what you need, but it has to feel like they're like, oh, I could do that. If it just feels like it's a moonshot and it's like, well, I don't even control that. I don't even know how. I'm like, what if I get sick? Well, then, you know, you just get into things like that. So
in your model, what you would do is you would say, okay, we'll give you $250 if you work until this time period and you only have three call outs and four charges.
Yeah. And you make that one like,
you can get $500 if you have no call outs and you have perfect attendance.
Yeah, or that would be like $700, and the $500, there's still mistakes that can be made. There's still room for error and humanity. And so, but the feeling should be for people, I can do that. If the feeling is, well, that's impossible. Well, I don't even control that. Then your bonus is pointless because they're like, cool, well, I'm not going to get it. So what do I care?
Yeah, I already got a doctor's appointment scheduled. I can't reschedule it, so I'm all
right. So now I'm done for. Now I don't even get access to anything. Great. It's on or off switch.
So Shane, in your example with the team and the CEO setting up something for the team, what if you have one person in the team that's not pulling their weight?
That's when you have to consider thinking about bonuses differently. So I'm not saying that's the philosophy of bonuses. What I'm saying is bonuses should almost always feel like one of the best things I've ever seen somebody do is they said, this is 100% bonus. Let's say it was, you know, $5,000 is 100% of your bonus. And then what they did was they didn't tell the employee this, but they reserved room for an additional $6,000 or $3,000 or whatever it was. And what they did is if the employee basically showed up, did their job, they didn't screw up. They weren't a bad team member. They just kind of did their job. They'd get 100% of their bonus. Mm-hmm. But if they showed up and they were doing some really great things, they would give 115, 120, 150% of their bonus. And now that team member feels like they are just, they're killing it. They're taking money from the employer. It's just psychology.
Sure.
In reality, what the employer did was they said, this is 100% of the bonus. We're going to give you 50% of it if you're a good employee, but they didn't call it 50%. They called it 100%. So that's 100% of your bonus. And then everything after that was all gravy. And so I would say, you know, back to Lisa, I would say make 250, 100% bonus. If you want to achieve 100% bonus, show up this many times. There's grace. There's room for error. There's room for whatever. There's room for humanity, but you're going to get it. But there is an opportunity to get 150% bonus. And there's even a chance to get 200% bonus. You know, whatever. It's the psychology of motivation. And what we know is people are motivated more, unless you're an entrepreneur. It's the only exception. Entrepreneurs are actually motivated by moonshots. Impossible goals that are really hard to achieve, they get highly motivated. But most people who want to work for someone else are motivated far more by, I'm getting the thing that I knew I could if I controlled the things that I had control over. And I'm being properly rewarded and respected for that.
So it seems like individual bonus structures where they have control of the behaviors that they can control to achieve those are more impactful or can be more impactful than that kind of that team environment.
You can do both. So you can do some partition some part of the budget into individual bonuses that are fully related to the levers they have control over. And that's an important part of bonusing also. It's like, make sure if you're giving bonuses on things that are like, make sure that it doesn't rain so much or that no kids get sick, or you're like, what's the point of this, right? So that's the first thing I would say is bonus individuals based on things they have control over. Do a 100, 120, 150% bonus structure. make sure it's clear what they'd have to do to get there before you do it. Don't just do it willy-nilly. That's one piece that you can do that is more motivating to the average bear. And like the only time anybody wouldn't get 100% of their bonus is if they were on the verge of getting terminated. Like it's a big, make it a big deal. Like, oh, okay, you didn't, you made these huge critical errors and you haven't been making changes. You're on a PIP. We can't give you 100% of your bonus. You know, that's when it's appropriate. But if they're generally a good employee, they should get 100%. So that's how you level set, like what is 100 and what I have to do to achieve it needs to feel like it's pretty good, easy to do. Then you could do on top of that, you could partition another amount of money that is a team-based objective. And the main thing you want to do there is you want to make sure that everybody who is bonused on that has the ability to influence that objective. The mistakes that I see some companies make is they're like, hey, you're in accounting and you're going to make or not make this bonus, even though you have no impact on whether the deal closes.
Right.
And so it's the finance team and the development team that they're going to get the deal, whatever business you're in, right? I'm just making stuff up. So you'd want to bonus people based on things that their team can actually meaningfully move the needle on.
It's hard because it's all kind of top line driven at some point in time. So
it is, but it's also true that some functions in an organization are rightly going to be bonused much more than other functions. You know, there's a reason sales guys make a lot more than operators. Because they are truly individually driving revenue to the company in a significant way, and nobody else is. So they should be compensated as salespeople are versus an operator or an accountant or whatever. And the industry expects that. You know, the industry sets the level standard of like what, and that's the other thing you got to do a bench about bonusing and compensation is you have to benchmark. You got to make sure that you're kind of like roughly within industry standard and market rates.
Right.
You can be a little generous or a little under, but if you're not competitive, you lose people.
I got more to dig in on this. Next time.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a simple answer.
Because now we're half set up a little bit differently as far as operators versus sales. We're all sales. Again, we can talk a little further, but.
If you want to come back and double click on it on the next call, that's great. You know, just come to me with kind of what's the objective? What is the behavior you're trying to achieve? What behavior are you wanting to incentivize? Mm-hmm. That drives how you create bonus structures.
Okay.
But what I do think is fairly universal is make it 100, 120, 150% of your bonus. And the max anybody could achieve is 150% of their bonus.
And clarity, of course.
Lots of clarity. And what I just said is to provide that clarity. You know exactly what you've got to hit in order to get those bonuses.
Yep. Okay.
Awesome. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for your time. We will look forward to talking to all of you next week.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.